G5, number 1B.
But the world was run on the basis of matter. And we run our life on the basis of matter, just the same. But for the first time in history, physicists begin to realize that there is no such thing as matter. And therefore one can understand those physicists that say, well, during the day we are in the laboratories and find out that there is no matter, that matter does not exist, and then at 5 o'clock we take our hat and go home and everything is a world of matter. We take our car and drive home, and at home we want to have a good meal, and then we have all the material wealth, we want to have a nice home, and therefore they say, quite frankly, we live in a schizophrenic universe. We are for 8 hours pretending that everything is spirit, and the rest of the day we are building on matter. But this is a sign of the crisis, that we are at the point where everything points towards getting away from matter and coming nearer and nearer to the fact that all is spirit and spiritual. And this, again, is not an affair, an affair is not a matter of a few days. Just think back, it was about the turn of the century that for the first time they found out something about the atoms, and finding out that not everything is just so much matter as we thought it would be. In the middle of this century we had James Jeans, who would say, well, the world looks more now like a big thought than a lot of matter. And little by little now up to now, they have found out just recently in the laboratories that actually there is no matter. Well, this is a long development just in the line of physics, which means that now more and more the materialistic point of view and the idealistic point of view that were always going along parallel since thousands of years are merging together, and finally the point of view of idealism has won its case. That the materialist must admit there is no matter, so we give it up. Do you know what that means for a materialistic government, for a materialistic ideal like communism, who rest entirely on the conception that there is only a material evolution and a material history, or what it means for the West, who loves so much the money, and loves so much to make more money, and who clings to the money, to see that matter does not exist, that reality is spiritual. We are in a crisis, in the West and in the East, in both parts, in a terrific crisis, that comes upon mankind slowly. You know, 30 years ago, you didn't know anything about the computer. 30 years afterwards, everybody knows what the computer is. Everybody has it, the computer at home. Everybody uses the computer. Within 30 years only, can you see, a change takes place. Now, how much more it will take place when now only a few begin to see in the physical world that there is no matter? It takes perhaps another century or so, or half a century, perhaps not even so much, until finally every child and everyone, the man in the street, knows that there is no matter and that he lives in a universe of illusions. Think of that crisis. Mankind becomes schizophrenic. It lives in two realms. Can you see the crisis? Can you see how that the transitional period must be very hard for us? When I was thinking about this problem over the last year or so more deeply, always being worried to see, I always was worried in so far that I felt I didn't really have the answer how to handle the world situation. I knew that I couldn't handle it anymore in an isolated way, but that there must be a completely different approach to it and a different consciousness to approach it. I was asking myself, where does Mrs. Eddy give her opinion about this whole issue? Sure, she lived 100 years ago, and therefore the problem was not so clear as it is today, so marked as it is here today, but Mrs. Eddy always had a prophetic sense, and she could see at least 100 years ahead. She was already talking around the century about atomic force, but nobody on the street, no man in the street knew anything about atomic force. So that I wondered, where does Mrs. Eddy touch on this subject, on this whole problem? And going naturally through the textbook and knowing the textbook, I could see that actually Mrs. Eddy speaks very bluntly only in one part of the textbook about this problem. And that is in the chapter on spiritualism. Interesting enough, in the chapter on spiritualism. Because as I have shown you, fundamentally, the crisis is a crisis between spirit and matter. Between spirit and matter, what is real? Is spirit real? Is matter real? Is God spirit or is God a material God? Is man spiritual or is man a material man? Can you see? It comes to that point of spirit. And the chapter on spiritualism deals very much with that question that God is spirit, but also that the universe is spiritual, that man is spiritual, and that the problem is the spiritualization of mankind. In that chapter on spiritualism, which has three parts, as you know, the third part has the overall tone of love and spirit. If you read the epitomes in the epitome book, you can see that the third part of spiritualism has the overall tone of love and spirit. And under that overall category, there are seven subjects. Meaning really that the subject of love and spirit can be seen from the point of view of mind, of spirit, of soul, of principle and life, and then of truth. And then she comes to truth, interesting enough, which is our age, the age of the 6,000-year period of truth. She speaks about this very problem that we are meeting. For instance, and I read now a few statements from that part. She says, love, after tone of love, will finally mark the hour of harmony. That's a tone of love. And spiritualization will follow. And then comma, for love is spirit. So she sets the tone right away at the beginning and says, now, let's look at our present age. Our present age, love has a purpose. Love has a goal. And love wants to bring us into all harmony. Love will finally mark the hour of harmony. Finally. She doesn't say, has marked now. But she can see into the future and says, love has a plan and a goal and is driving towards that goal. How? What is the means to arrive there? Through spiritualization. Can you see through spirit? That's what we have touched upon, that I said, today mankind enters into a period where it begins to realize that only spirit is real, that matter does not exist in the way that we felt that matter is substance. She goes on and says, before error is wholly destroyed, again, looking into the future, you see, there will be interruptions of the general material routine. Can you see, there will be interruptions, there will be a crisis, there will be a chemicalization. It's what we experience today, these interruptions. Suddenly a new problem just pops up we have not been aware of. Suddenly there is the ecological problem, there is the population explosion problem, there is terrorism, crime, and so on, just popping up overnight, so to say. So there is interruption of the general material routine. So she was expecting the situation that we are in today. Earth, she said, will become dreary and desolate. That's what we experience. The deforestation of the tropics, the expansion of the deserts, all that earth will become dreary and desolate. Until, again in the future, until the final spiritualization of all things. Can you see, constantly is that is the common denominator, there will be somewhere harmony. But until you come there, there is actually crisis, chemicalization. We know that crisis and chemicalization is the counterfeit of spirit, and that crisis and chemicalization will be handled through spiritualization. So the task that is upon us is really to undergo that spiritualization of all things. Not only spiritualization of man, he says, the spiritualization of all things. And the nuclear physicists begin to spiritualize matter. In a way, saying there is no matter, everything is non-material. She goes on and says, this material world is even now becoming the arena of conflicting forces. So you can see what we go through is more or less predicted in Mrs. Eddy's textbook, so that we can say, well, we shouldn't really be astonished that these things happen. Actually, apparently, this is in the line of spiritual unfoldment, that this chemicalization comes, and that we go through the arena of conflicting forces. The breaking up of material beliefs, that's what we witness, the breaking up of material beliefs, may seem to be famine. Yes, isn't there a lot of famine on this earth? And pestilence, want, and woe. Do we have enough want and woe? Sin, sickness, and death. But not only that, which assume new phases, unknown phases in the past. And really, the world of today cannot be compared with the world of the past. Until their nothingness appears. Can you see again? The nothingness appears. The tone of love, where we see that love is all and evil is nothing. But it takes that breaking up of material beliefs, it takes that assuming of new forms of famine and pestilence, sin, sickness and woe. It all takes that. Then she says, these disturbances, again chemicalization, crisis, these disturbances will continue until the end of era, when all discord will be swallowed up in truth. So in this way, can you see, she depicts actually the situation in which the world is in today. And I think this is a good thing to know, because we have so much trust in Mrs. Eddy's revelation. We feel that she really was a scribe under order, that what she has given us in the textbook is the truth, and that we only have to find out that truth and see that truth, and then to see that she more or less foresaw the whole development of this age of truth, and has seen that these disturbances will happen, that we will not go through an easy period materially, and so we can have that confidence that problem in which we are in is a natural problem, something that happened according to order and law, because the Christ idea is just pushing and pushing towards that end, which says that's the end of error. Also, we would see what she says, that midnight foretells the dawn. We shouldn't forget that. We seem to be in a period of midnight. We are not quite sure it is 5 to 12 at midnight or 5 past 12 at midnight, but certainly midnight but not noon, foretells the dawn. That we don't lose the aim out of sight. On one side, there will be discord and dismay. We feel that so, and that's coming on us even more. But on the other side, there will be science and peace, giving us a wonderful sense that there is one world, but that that one world can be looked at as dismay and, what did she say, as dismay and discord. Another one can look at the same world from the point of view of science and peace. It's just up to each one of us on which side we want to be. Are we going to make this transition period, this chemicalization period, a reality and something that gets worse and worse and worse and always worse until the final end of being worse? Or are we on the side of science? Then we have peace. We can have within ourselves today a terrific peace if we stick on the side of science and look out from science and not look out from the material world. So that every sad end, so to say, is always a bright beginning. We should never lose sight of that, or else we get dismayed and discouraged. Therefore, she says, but those who discern Christian Science will hold crime in check. They will aid in the ejection of error. So now she comes to the point where she said, what is the responsibility of the students of Christian Science? What is his part in that whole picture? And shows that we, when we understand science, should be able to hold crime in check and will aid in the ejection of error. The question is, how much did really Mrs. Eddy foresee the form of what is coming? Not only, so to say, what she said in the textbook, the theory of what is coming, but how much did she see the actual form? We have two prophecies that circulate as unauthorized literature, like collectania and things like that, that give us two prophecies of Mrs. Eddy. The one prophecy is about the year 2000. It is a prophecy told by Mrs. Eddy, which she made to two of her students. And it reads like this, that she said, the reason for asking, is the universe including men evolved by atomic force? That was the title of a lesson sermon always. So the question why she has chosen that title is that Christian Science must answer that question to the world, or all will be destroyed by fire in the year 2000. So Bucky Fuller and Mrs. Eddy are rather near in their estimate of the date where there may be an end to the whole thing. Can you see, she doesn't say, well, all this will be right, you just trust, all will be fine, and don't bother, and so on. She said, no, she made the conditions. She said, all will be fine if Christian Scientists will hold crime in check. If not, then it will burn up in the year 2000. Well, what she meant by burning up is naturally not that somebody takes a match and begins to burn some paper and then finally the whole earth is in fire. It was a beautiful picture, just as in Apocalypse, you see, of the atomic explosion. She makes another prophecy for the year 2100. She said, that was in 1904, she said, in the year 2100, I think will be the end. What kind of an end? Then Christian Scientists will have held crime in check, as the book Science and Health tells us. She says, as the book Science and Health tells us, where does she tell that in the textbook? There, in Spiritualism, where I have read it. I have just read before that Christian Scientists will have to hold crime in check. So can you see, the moment she is talking about the spiritual evolution of the world, she always refers back to that chapter on Spiritualism, to love and spirit at the point of truth. But even if one is a bit hesitant to accept these unauthorized sayings, and always with a pinch of caution, we still can go back to her writing. And in No and Yes, she says, material history is drawing to a close. That's in No and Yes. That's Mrs. Eddy's statement. Isn't it interesting that we believe everything that Mrs. Eddy says in the textbook, and yet we refuse it? Do we believe the statement that material history is drawing to a close? Do we really believe it? If we would believe it, we would be in line with it. But we never say yes to that statement. We never accept it. We accept it perhaps intellectually, but not with our whole heart. With our whole heart, we stick with matter, and we try to improve matter, and we like matter, and we hold on to matter, and we hope that to make more of matter. Or are we really there where we say, yes, material history is drawing to the close, therefore matter, material beliefs, material affection, material this, material that, has to go? And are we willing to let go? Are we really willing? Usually we are not. And therefore we must not be surprised that we are in a terrific chemicalization. We are not honest to the teaching. I would say not one is honest to the teaching. At one point we see that very clearly as vision, say, yes, it is so, and now even the physicists come and say, yes, it is so. But in our feelings, we cling to the material world. And we are very discouraged now, very not at ease anymore, huh? If anything material is taken away from us. Disenchanted, quite right. If we lose anything material, if we don't make progress in the material, we are disenchanted. We still are spiritualists. A chapter Spiritualism says that we like to mix spirit and matter. We like the spiritual as long as it can help us to improve matter, to make matter better. Then we like spirit. But when spirit says, material history is drawing to a close, you have to lose it, one day you have to lose it, it gives us some kind of discomfort. And that is the chemicalization we all go through. Why are we afraid of a nuclear war? Because it takes away all that is material. It doesn't take away a single tint of the spiritual. Not a single. We lose nothing spiritually with a nuclear war. It can be very discomfortable for a few days or weeks or so through the fallout, and then all is over. But we never lose anything spiritually. Never. But we are afraid of losing it. And in a way, I would say is right, because the process of spiritualization should not come in that way. It should not come in an outward way. It should come through a mutation of our material beliefs, That should mutate. That should first change. That would be the harmonious working out of matter, and not through an outward happening. So, I have tried somehow to reduce those big world problems to a very simple common denominator, and have shown that it is actually up to us what we make out of the whole problem, that therefore individually we can solve the problem for ourselves. But I know very well that we feel we should, the whole world should work out that problem. And then we get discouraged because we see the world is not willing to work out the problem spiritually. And then we say, what can we do? We are but a few. And look into the whole universe of 4 billion people that are far away from spiritualizing their consciousness. And then we say, what can we do? We are so few, so helpless. Is that the right attitude? Has ever in the history of mankind something big, has ever something big started with the multitude? Or has it always started with an individual? Wasn't just Abraham the one that went out of Ur? Wasn't it always the individual, the patriarchs, Moses, Joshua, that would lead? Always individuals. Wasn't it just the individual called Jesus? An individual called Mary Baker Eddy. It starts with the individual. It never starts with the big crowd. And therefore we cannot say, well, the others don't take it so, everything is hopeless. No. It's the individual that counts. Because it's not quantity that counts, it's always the idea that counts. An idea is always one with God. It's always a majority. One with God is always a majority. So one with God is a majority. That's why we read also in Samuel that nice saying, the Lord can save by many or by few. He doesn't know quantity. A right idea in mathematics solves every problem, no matter if millions can't solve it. It solves it. It only needs one who sees through. But then when we see that, we must be very careful that not another false argument comes up within us that says, all right, it only needs a few. A few wise thinkers are better than a wilderness of dullards, says Mrs. Eddy. So that's fine. Max is going to do it for us. So we must see what the individual can do and what he cannot do. What could Jesus as an individual do? He could solve his individual problems. He could also solve for himself individually the collective problem of that time and the universal problem of his time. He could do that individually, but he couldn't do it for the others. They had to go the way too. Can you see, it's not right or not true that Jesus individually could solve for the collective a collective problem. He could only show the way, but he for himself could individually solve his individual aspect or individually the collective problem. He for himself, he could handle the collective problem of that day. And he individually could also handle the universal problem of that day by overcoming death. So the same is today. Individually we can say, all right, everything starts with oneself. I can individually first see that I solve my individual problems. And as I live in a collective, in a universe, I can also individually solve the collective problem, those problems which we have depicted. We can solve that individually. The problem of all that whole list of so-called unsolvable problems, we can solve individually. But we can't do it for our neighbor. He has to do it himself. And therefore we must see that, because there is no chance that we can give to 4 billion people, see, within the next few years, the whole truth that we know is the solution. We can't do that. That is hopeless. Therefore, we must not fall into the trap of feeling, well, we should do that. We should save the world. We shouldn't do that. There is individually no world to be saved. We are in a safe world. On one side, there will be peace and harmony and science. And we get only bogged down because we feel, how on earth can I tell Andropov that he should act differently? How on earth can I, what can I do that Arafat acts differently? That everyone acts differently in this world. We can't. That's their problem. That's their problem, not ours. But our problem is to live in this world, but not from this world. And therefore, we can solve that whole collective problem individually. That's where we start. How can we solve that? And there, I think we have seen, during the last 2 or 3 years, the answer. It is actually only about 3 years ago that one has begun to realize that we have to make the shift from the 6,000-year period to the 7,000-year period. That shift, which alone can take in the problem as a whole, which says, go out from the capitalized terms and stay with the capitalized term. Don't go down to individual ideas. Naturally, for that we have to have the tonality of the capitalized terms. If I have that, then I can go through the whole chart which we have, you know, through the whole levels, the level of science itself, the level of divine science, of absolute Christian science, of Christian science, and stay there, and not budge from there, because that's a consciousness which really says, I go out from the whole and remain in the whole and for the glory of the whole. Then we use that redundancy principle, which says, in the whole, every individual thing is included. Then we know that that consciousness has a Christ, that that consciousness is working in the universe, and that consciousness is beginning to move in the universe that which has to be moved in the universe. It really begins to overturn and overturn what needs to be overturned. We not even know where and when and what specifically has to be overturned. But we always know from history, even from history, we know that there always happens in history at the crucial time a crucial thing that nobody has expected, and it turns the whole history upside down. History is not made today how many rockets the Russians have and how many rockets the American have. History is made through ideas. And in that whole proposition that we are in here now, we will see that the idea, if we entertain the idea of God rightly and stay with that standpoint, that that has a Christ and will suddenly bring in a change somewhere, somehow, at some time. We don't know how, when, and where. We only know that there is an idea at work. And the less we have a conception how it should happen, the better for us. The less we limit the infinite possibility and give really God a chance. And God has a Christ. So that's what I feel at the present moment we could entertain in our consciousness in order to grow in science and peace through the future.